and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org. Community amplified.
A very happy Wednesday evening to you all, and happy New Year's Eve. I hope you're having a good one. Welcome back to The Soundtrack. I'm your occasionally genial host, Liv L. Spiro, and tonight we are going to be talking about and listening to some of the best music used in TV and film in 2025. And to do that, I've enlisted the help of a good friend and collaborator, writer-producer on shows like Just Shoot Me, Family Guy, and Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, and Academy Award nominated writer and winner of the Writers Guild Award for Best Original Screenplay for The Holdovers, and not least of all, cocktail crafter extraordinaire, Mr. David Hemmingson. Welcome back, Dave.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Lev. It's a thrill to be here. As always, Mookie, good to see you.
Good to see you.
I'm just ecstatic to be here talking about this on New Year's Eve.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. This is your third outing. And, well, we had such a good time doing the best music for TV and film in 2024. I just had to twist your arm to get you to come back and do it again.
Well, that's thrilling. I'm glad you did. There was actually no twisting involved. You made a very gracious invitation, and I accepted.
Maybe minimal twisting. I also want to give a shout out to the super fabulous Mookie, who is running the board for us tonight and making sure we stay within the bounds of propriety, or making sure we don't. I always forget which, honestly. But thank you, Mookie.
You're very welcome. Just making sure everybody's on their best behavior today on this New Year's Eve program.
That was it. That was the one. Okay, so Dave, you're a punk rocker. Yes, you are. Tell us about your first pick for the best of 2025, which involves a lovably obnoxious dog in a cape.
Okay, a little preface here. One of my dearest friends is a guy named Jeff Hoppe, and he's a hardcore comic book nerd and movie guy, so I had to see Superman.
Superman, yeah.
The new Superman. And I gotta say, I'm not necessarily a superhero movie kind of aficionado, but I like this one, because I kind of went in thinking, how many times are we going to reboot Superman, right? I mean, do we need to reboot Superman? And the truth of the matter is, I dug it. I came away thinking it was worth it. I mean, Superman was created by Siegel and Shuster, these two immigrant kids, and they kind of crafted this iconic American hero. And something about Superman, just appealing to me that he's still around and alive in the public consciousness. And, you know, James Gunn has taken the helm of the DC universe. He's the same guy who, with Guardians of the Galaxy, put the fun and attitude back into the DC kind of oeuvre, and he did something a little different with this Superman. This Superman kind of reflects the Silver Age of DC Comics, which is from 1956 to 1970, with kind of expanded powers and an expanded universe and family. Supergirl, Crypto the Superdog, who you mentioned is in this movie, with a cape. I found him incredibly charming, if entirely CGI. So this is a franchise movie that is commercial, but still has something to say about integrity and kindness and what we used to call truth, justice, and the American way. And the song Punk Rocker is kind of perfect in that context. The song has the unkillable Iggy Pop on vocals, and it's an homage to the idea that it's punk to care about something with zero irony.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the lyric. I listen to the music with no fear. You can hear it too if you are sincere. I'm a punk rocker. Yes, I am. And it's like Superman, who's the ultimate sincere superhero, is punk for standing up for the people who can't stand up for themselves.
So the song is kind of emblematic of one of the major themes of the film.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also sort of commercial yet earnest, like the movie. So there's something kind of really appealing to it, to the song. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And I must say, I must offer this caveat. I agree with Alan Moore, who's the genius behind some of the greatest graphic novels of all time, including Watchmen and V for Vendetta and From Hell, in that the superhero adulation phenomenon can be weaponized in sort of authoritarian fantasies. And I like the way this movie examines that idea without selling out the character and still providing us with a good time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, listen, in addition to being an amazingly well-chosen song for this film, it's also just a great song. Let's give it a listen. This is The Teddy Bears featuring Iggy Pop with Punk Rocker.
Looking good, I got both hands.
Excellent song. Great, fun movie. And for me, too, that was the first superhero movie I have enjoyed in a really long time. Dave, I was a big fan of the series House of Guinness this year. And my first pick is a piece of music that, for me, is it's a great example of modern music used well in a period drama. So House of Guinness is set in the early 20th century in Dublin. It's in a world of tradition and hierarchy and social codes. And yet at one key moment, the filmmakers drop in this track by The Scratch, a contemporary Irish band. And what's fascinating is it doesn't feel like a gimmick. The music has real modern muscle, distorted guitars, drive, urgency, but it also carries something deeply Irish in its bones. It feels communal. It feels like pub energy, like momentum. And most importantly, it expresses the emotional reality of the characters, even though it's a century advanced from the film reality. And that's something wildly different from how, for example, the filmmakers use Queen's We Will Rock You in the movie A Knight's Tale, which just completely broke the film from any kind of groundedness in historical reality. And for me, however much I had been enjoying the movie up to that point, it just became too dumb to stay invested in as a viewer. In House of Guinness, the music belongs to the people on screen, not to us watching from 2025. So it energizes the scene, it pushes the narrative forward, and somehow it still feels of the place and time. That's a tough needle to thread, and this track nails it. So describing their sound as hard rock meets traditional Irish music, this is the Dublin band The Scratch with Another Round.
Just taking the time to wash the wall paint dry. The sound of a bell now crowds dull, shattering, filling the air within an inch of its life. A man on either side of me, the bar to the right, I'd be lucky to make it out of here with me life. And isn't that your man that barred us last time for singing rat tunes on a Tuesday night? Looking like a rabbit hound, get up out of that, get up off the ground. I'll tie you to the chair if you don't simmer down. You're the world's worst patron saint of stout. Actually, didn't I bar you last week? And what are you doing with a spliff in your mouth? Alright then, never mind, what'll it be, lads? Another round, 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 another round. Just taking the time to wash the wall paint dry. The sound of a bell loud crowds dull, chattering, filling the air within an inch of its life. A man on either side of me, the bar to the right, I'd be lucky to make it out of here with me life. And isn't that your man that barred us last ever singing rat tunes on a Tuesday night? I was down the back of another house dull, just taking the time to wash the wall paint dry. The sound of a bell loud crowds dull, chattering, filling the air within an inch of its life. A man on either side of me, the bar to the right, I'd be lucky to make it out of here with me life. And isn't that your man that barred us last ever singing rat tunes on a Tuesday night?
tunes on a Tuesday night.
For a pint of Guinness after the show.
I agree.
Oh, great. Dave.
Scottish. That wasn't Irish. It was Scottish.
Well, they're not the same thing?
No,
they're not. Okay. Tell us your next pick, my friend.
Okay, so my next pick is a song called Come On Up to the House by Tom Waits. And it's in a movie called Wake Up Dead Man.
Great film.
Which is great film. It's a Rian Johnson picture. Rian Johnson is a genius. I love Brick. I love Looper. I love his TV show Poker Face, and this is the third installment of the Knives Out franchise. It's interesting because I consider it to be kind of a return to form after the second installment, which I think was a little kind of all over the place, a little squirrely. I liked it, but I mean, I think this is a
squirrely and entertaining. I loved it.
I just feel like it was a little diffuse, and I think this is really focused, and it's a meditation on pain, betrayal, and forgiveness. I think it's actually an excellent film, and it stars Josh O'Connor. Who's a great young actor as this sort of former boxer who's now a priest. But he's not the only outstanding actor in the picture. I mean, Ryan consistently stacks the Knives Out movies with killer ensembles. And this movie's no exception. It features Andrew Scott, who's my favorite actor working today, as well as Kerry Washington and Daryl McCormick. Josh Brolin rocks it as kind of a sulfurous, charismatic priest. And Glenn Close crushes it doing her best Frau Blücher. thank you. Imitation. Just great, great, great. And, of course, Daniel Craig anchors the whole franchise with his kind of tasty detective Benoit Blanc. He's laid back, he's smart, he's charming, he's low-key sexy, and his suit is just like mwah, chef's kiss. What a great wardrobe. So Come On Up to the House by Tom Waits is a great choice to close this movie, this very, very good movie. It's an excellent movie, actually, because it's both both the song and the movie are about forgiveness and redemption. And both the song and the movie treat that topic with a sense of humor. My favorite line in the song is, "Come down off the cross, we could use the wood." It epitomizes the film in that it's smart and self-aware, but also deeply generous of spirit. And it's got, you know, a real kind of, not as much anthemic, it's almost like a kind of a old rugged cross kind of hymn feeling to the song. It's a very kind of rich and gravelly song, and it kind of fits with the essential truth of the movie. And I would like to also state for the record that I love Tom Waits, and I think he's an American treasure akin to Woody Guthrie or Allen Ginsberg, a true original with an inimitable voice and a brilliant mind. And
you mentioned a bunch of the great actors in the film. I also really like Jeffrey Wright,
who he's
in the very first scene as this world-weary clergyman who I found instantly relatable and likable and human, even though he's a bishop. It's a great, great movie. So here is Mr. Tom Waits with Come On Up to the House.
Cracked. Come on up to the house. The only things that you can see is all that you lack. Come on up to the house. All your crying don't do no good. Come on up to the house. Can use the wood you gotta come on up to the house. Come on up to the house. Come on up to the house. The world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. You got to come on up to the house.
There's only one Tom Waits. There's only one human with that voice.
I agree.
Amazing. Well, Dave, the next cue I want to talk about is from the film Weapons. And I should say up front, I am not a big fan of horror films. A lot of them depend on startle mechanics, you know, jump scares, loud cues, gross images. And that kind of horror to me, it's all external. It happens to the audience. It happens to the audience, right? And honestly, I don't go to the movies to be jolted. I get that from reading the New York Times in the morning. But Weapons isn't that kind of movie. It treats fear as existential rather than sensational. The unease comes not from what jumps out at you, but from what quietly destabilizes social order, moral certainty, cause and effect. It's closer for me to films like The Shining or The Silence of the Lambs, where the horror, it isn't about shock, it's about recognition. It's about the moment when you realize the world that you thought was holding together and making sense isn't. So you understand that immediately in the opening moments of the film, when the film uses George Harrison's song Beware of Darkness over these deeply unsettling images of children running from their homes in the dead of night. And the song, it isn't frightening in any conventional sense. It's more reflective and spiritual and almost gentle. And that's what makes it so unsettling. So Harrison isn't warning us with menace, but with quiet conviction. The lyrics, not conviction, conviction. The lyrics feel like counsel, almost a prophecy. And as these images unfold, the film makes a promise. This isn't a movie about jump scares. It's about something corrosive, something spreading. So as an opening cue, it teaches you how to watch the film. You know, pay attention, be patient, don't trust appearances. By the time the narrative truly begins, the emotional ground has already shifted under your feet and you've been sucked in. So from the film Weapons, this is George Harrison with Beware of Darkness. And Beware of Darkness. You're listening to the soundtrack right here on the SoCal Sound. And we are talking to our special guest, writer-producer Dave Hemmingson.
Hey, Lev, I want to say that I totally agree with you on Weapons being a great movie. I really enjoyed it. I think it was one of the best major studio releases of the year. I'm more of a horror movie fan than you are. Yeah. And then I think some of the most interesting stuff is actually being done in horror right now in terms of social commentary, because it's kind of cost effective to make a horror movie. Super expensive and are often cast with, like, you know, actors that aren't as well known. So they kind of push the envelope. But this, for a large, big budget studio picture, I thought was a great picture.
It was amazing.
Picture. Yeah, transcended the genre, like Silence. Like you mentioned.
Well, let me ask you this. How important is it, from a writing standpoint, that the opening music informs the audience as to the tone of the story?
I think it's crucial. I mean, you're setting the tone, like you're saying, for the picture. You're kind of calibrating people's emotions. You're kind of announcing what this film will be. It can be done in a very straightforward way. It can be done ironically. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and if it's done ironically, it's telling the audience, okay, there's going to be a little irony in this picture. You should get, sit down, get out your popcorn, prepare to treat it that way. I also think closing music is crucially important. And it's interesting, a lot of the hits you get on film soundtracks are often closing credit crawl music.
For example,
Punk Rocker in Superman's the crawl music at the end of the picture, right? And it sort of summarizes what the movie's been about and kind of like reinforces that earnest tone.
Yeah.
So opening music, crucially important in setting the tone and kind of teasing the audience into what to expect. And then closing music is that bookend that kind of, you know, the coda, sort of saying, this is what you got.
That's a great point. And one of the picks I have coming up is from Slow Horses, and it is exactly that. It's the last piece of music on the entire series. Well, this next piece you're going to talk about is one that I almost picked as well. Tell us about the song Starburster and the show Mobland.
Yeah, I love this track. It's kind of been everywhere in the last year or so. So let's talk about the show first. So Mobland is a British gangster series on Paramount Plus, and it stars Tom Hardy as a fixer for a crime family called the Harrigan crime family, led by Pierce Brosnan and Helen Mirren, okay? Now, I love British gangster movies, Lev, and they can run the gamut and tonally from classic nihilism like Get Carter or The Long Good Friday to emotionally charged character studies like Peaky Blinders or Sexy Beast, to crimedies like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels or The Gentleman, both of which are Guy Ritchie
joints. I'm sorry, I've never heard crimedy before.
Crimedy, man.
Yeah, okay.
Crimedy.
Yeah.
And kind of everything in between. So they can kind of, you know, adopt whatever kind of tone. There's a wide variety of tones that you can gravitate toward with British gangster pictures. Mobland falls into the more kind of classic nihilism category in that it's very heavy on the ultraviolence, so it can be a bit hard to watch when it gets gruesome. But you get a sense that everybody in this show is having a great time and chewing a lot of scenery. It's also kind of super soapy, leaning into the family dynamics. I love Pierce Brosnan going full Irish badass and Helen Mirren scheming with him and against him, kind of like an unhinged Lady Macbeth. And it's just, you know, a lot of fun. Tom Hardy's awesome. And the track Starburster is a kind of a dizzy dance track with kind of a trip-hop vibe and a sung-spoken rap that evokes paranoia, bad behavior, and trouble just around the corner. It's got shades of Portishead and Blur, so it feels extremely British. My oldest son, Nick, says it sounds like walking through a sketchy neighborhood in London. I think it's a great description. And that lines up perfectly with the tone and theme of the show. And I especially love the huge gasp that the lead singer unleashes in the chorus, which I've read is kind of an anxious tic of his. It's an actual physical tic of his. I also love how the singer keeps saying, "I want," as if the song is about questionable desires and choices, much like the ones that Tom Hardy is making in the show. So it's
cool.
Kind of perfectly calibrated. We talk about, you know, a song, an opening song announcing a show, defining a show. I think this track perfectly announces and defines the show.
Well said, sir. This was one of the first tracks used on House of Guinness, which I already talked about in the first episode. So here it is. This is Starburster by Fontaines D.C.
We'll be right back. business if it's momentary. I want a shot at a gag if it's a bottle of bag. I want a strike of the sack, I need the fan from it. I want a shot in the dag, I want to make the mag. I want to lift the yak, I call the ends on it. I want to take the truth where it lands on it. My God given insanity, it depends on it. How I feel, how I feel, how I feel, I want to heal.
Great band right there, Fontaines DC with Starburster. You're listening to The Soundtrack with Lev Spiro and special guest Dave Hemmingson. More from our studio in just a bit. And of course, a Happy New Year to you and yours from all of us here at the SoCal Sound.
Happy New Year. Today is the last day to make your year-end donation that keeps the SoCal Sound music you love going strong and for getting into the sweepstakes to win a pair of tickets to see the Foo Fighters on January 14th at the Kia Forum. Anyone who makes a donation of any amount is automatically eligible. Please give online at thesocalsound.org.
Support comes from iLead Exploration, an accredited TK through 12th grade public charter school, open to all with no tuition required. Guide your child's learning journey at home in partnership with credentialed teachers and counselors, serving Los Angeles, Orange, Kern, Ventura, and San Bernardino counties. More information is available at iLeadExploration.org.
Wish I was the moon tonight.
Thanks to our friends at Live Nation, the SoCal Sound has tickets for Nico Case at Observatory Santa Ana on March 9th. Current members can find contest rules and enter to be eligible for a pair of tickets at thesocalsound.org. No purchase necessary. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Nico Case, Observatory Santa Ana, March 9th.
God bless me, I'm a free man.
Support for the SoCal Sound is made possible by Subaru of Glendale, celebrating the 2025 Share the Love event happening now through January 2nd. Subaru and Subaru of Glendale will donate up to $325 to a charity of your choice with the purchase or lease of any new Subaru. Subaru is made for day-to-day, active, and busy lifestyles. Subaru provides all-terrain capability, advances in technology and safety, and is ready for your upcoming winter adventures. Subaru of Glendale, located on Brand Boulevard, just off the 5 and 134 freeways. Information available at SubaruofGlendale.com. That's SubaruofGlendale.com.
Make a team with cancer, smile this holiday season. Support the 14th annual Kevin Cardasco Foundation Holiday Teen Drive. For the past 13 years, we have custom built and hand-delivered gift bags to every teen being treated and work closely with the teen units of the four major hospitals in Los Angeles. Go to www.somethingyellow.org. You can choose a gift from our Amazon wish list and it will be delivered directly to us, or make a tax-deductible donation and we will do the shopping for you. We are a 501c3 foundation.
Happy New Year from all of us at 88.5 The SoCal Sound.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Soundtrack. I'm your host, Lavelle Spiro. We're here with special guest star, Dave Hemmingson, writer-producer Dave Hemmingson. And Dave, one show I've been a big fan of over the past five seasons is Slow Horses. It's a sharply written British spy series about disgraced MI5 agents exiled to Slough House, a bureaucratic purgatory run by Gary Oldman's brilliant Jackson Lamb character. It strips espionage of glamour and replaces it with institutional rot, gallows humor, and a fairly cynical sense of how power actually operates. At the very end of the season, the show closes with Crowded House's Fall at Your Feet, which is a song built on vulnerability and emotional openness, qualities we've seen precious little of in this world. The track comes after the danger has passed, during the aftermath, the denouement, and it plays deliberately against the story we've just watched. Its tenderness doesn't soften the cynicism, it exposes it. It underscores the irony that grace and accountability in the system rarely land where they should. So I was delighted, honestly, because it's from one of my favorite Crowded House albums, Woodface. But beyond that, I realized that the song, instead of offering us catharsis, it just leaves us unsettled. It reminds us what human connection sounds like, and then lets that contrast hang in the air. A beautiful song used not to ease the ending, but to sharpen it, which feels exactly right for Slow Horses.
Like I'm moving inside her, lying in the dark, and I think that I'm beginning to know her. Let it go, I'll be there when you call, and whenever I fall.
I just love that song. I love that band. I've loved that band since the first album. I remember when the album came out.
Woodface?
Yeah, it's just a banger. Like, everything is a banger on that
album. It's a great album.
There's not a bad track on the album.
He's such a good writer,
too. Yeah, Neil Finn.
Dave, your next pick is a natural segue from Slow Horses, right?
Exactly right, because it's from the creator of Slow Horses, the author of the Slow Horses books, Mick Herron. And the name of the show is Down Cemetery Road. Mm-hmm. And it's the series of books that I believe predates Slow Horses. So it's sort of logical that when Slow Horses blew up the way that it did, justifiably so, because I agree with you, Love, it's excellent. They're going to be doing, you know, a preceding series of books because Slow Horse is a monster hit. But this show in and of itself is very, very good. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. Ruth Wilson, who's a triple threat, she's a stage, television, and film actress, plays kind of an emotionally fragile art restorer from Oxford who's caught up in a deadly government cover-up, and she goes on the run with the always spectacular Emma Thompson.
Whom I love in this.
Oh, she's fantastic in this. Here playing a salty private investigator who wears Doc Martens in a long leather trench coat. She's just great, great. Kind of spiky hair and, you know, a nice sort of like odd couple to do.
And mean a lot of the time.
Mean and sort of dyspeptic and kind of morally questionable a lot of the time. But, you know, there's a strong strain of comedy that runs through the show too, which I love. And the tone, you know, honestly, on the show is a little betwixt and between. It's got kind of Killing Eve vibes in that it blends comedy and ultraviolence, and the results are a little mixed at times. But I think where it succeeds is in the relationship between those two characters, between Ruth Wilson and Emma Thompson, who are awesome together. Now, this song is PJ Harvey's Big Exit. I love Polly Jean Harvey. I always have. I think she's wonderful. And this song is kind of perfect in the context of the show because PJ Harvey just really rocks it out on this track. I mean, there's menace and there's passion and there's doomed urgency in this song. There's bombast, like the stakes are super high. And it's extremely British, like the show itself. And it kind of really kind of commemorates the tone in a beautiful way. And this wasn't one of the opening tracks. It was actually, it appears later in the show in one of the later episodes. But it kind of commemorates and summarizes what the tone and the trajectory of the show has been over the course of the series.
Righto. Well, here is PJ Harvey with her song, Big Exit.
I walk on concrete, I walk on sand.
Harvey, Big Exit, used in the show Down Cemetery Road. Dave, the next song is also one of your picks, and it's from one of my favorite bands. Tell us about it.
Okay, so this next track is from One Battle After Another, and there's a huge amount of buzz around this movie, and understandably so. I think it's so great. I think it's harrowing and dramatic and poignant and deeply hilarious at times. It's a very interesting kind of collision of tones, this picture. And it's based loosely on a Thomas Pynchon novel called Vineland. Now, One Battle has this kind of meta-comedy thing going on, in that Leo DiCaprio is a great burned-out revolutionary, great as this burned-out revolutionary who has gone underground, and Benicio del Toro is fantastic as this karate sensei with a heroic secret. Newcomer Chase Infinity is amazing as DiCaprio's daughter. And there's a rawness and an honesty to her, actually, that reminds me of Dominic Sessa, who starred in my movie The Holdovers. But I must say, Sean Penn is kind of the dark center of this movie, playing an Ahab-like white supremacist named Colonel Stephen J. Lockjaw, who will do anything, break any law, disappear any migrant, to join the shadowy cabal running the U.S. government called the Christmas Adventurers Club. And their chant is Hail Santa. I think this movie is hugely on time. It says so much about where we are as a country, but it says it in the most unique and compelling and unexpected way. And even though it felt a little shambolic at times, and I think, Lev, you were kind of responding to the sort of kind of loosey-goosiness of the movie, perhaps, at times. There's a section in the picture that kind of feels dropped in from another movie. I think it's one of the best sections, but it does feel a little bit separate and apart from. I still love this movie. In fact, I loved it because it had the courage of its tone and convictions, and it reveled in its pacing. Now, the song we're going to play is a song by Steely Dan called Dirty Work. And it comes at a perfect moment in this movie, and it's totally ideal for the picture. Now, this cut is off Steely Dan's first album, Can't Buy a Thrill, from 73, my favorite Steely Dan album. And it's the way it's used in the picture is funny and ironic, and it provokes a kind of nostalgia, which is interesting to me. That's kind of discordant, but also completely appropriate at the same time.
Well, the first part of the film takes place in the early 70s, doesn't it?
No, in the book it does. In the movie, it's actually the 90s.
Oh.
So it's really kind of out of time. The fact that this is out of time is interesting to me. But I want to go on record declaring my unalloyed love for Steely Dan. Call them yacht rock, call them dad rock, call them whatever you like. Becker and Fagan are magnificent, and their excellence defies all labels. And like this movie, the song is smart, melancholy, and kind of wonderfully defiant.
Well, here you go. From Can't Buy a Thrill, this is Donald Fagan, Walt Becker, Jeff the Skunk Baxter, and more. Here's Steely Dan.
Hard, you're afraid to pay the fee, so you find yourself.
Steely Dan, Dirty Work. Dave, one of the shows I really enjoyed this year was Dexter Resurrection. Michael C. Hall is in top form, bringing all of Dexter's ruthless precision and inward conflict back to life with a performance that's still chilling and strangely empathetic. And he's supported by an amazing guest cast that includes Peter Dinklage, Uma Thurman, Kristen Ritter, Neil Patrick Harris. It felt to me like the strongest season of Dexter since season 4 of the original series. Which brings me to this music cue, The Big Bad Wolf by The Heavy, because this track feels like Dexter DNA distilled into 4 minutes. It plays during a scene where Dexter's son Harrison is methodically cleaning up after a murder. Gloves on, plastic laid out, surfaces wiped clean. It's procedural, it's disturbing, but the music has this swaggering, almost playful groove to it. So the brilliance of the choice is how the music shapes the experience of the scene. It drives the editing, it gives the sequence momentum, and drops us right back into that familiar Dexter space where horror and dark humor coexist. The song doesn't excuse the violence, but it makes the moment propulsive and stylized and disturbingly watchable. Musically, it's a blend of grit and funk and menace that captures the tone of the series perfectly. It's sinister, but it struts. And that contradiction is at the heart of Dexter. Listening to the SoCal Sound, this is The Soundtrack, and we're here in the studio talking about some of our favorite music moments from TV and film in 2025. We're here with writer-producer Dave Hemmingson and the one and only Mookie. Mookie! Turkey.
Hi.
How has 2025 treated you, sir?
It was a wild ride, man. Yeah. Between all of us and everybody listening in Radioland, I'm happy 2025 is over.
Okay. Well, what is your biggest wish for 2026? Does it have anything to do with funding for the station?
A sudden windfall, an influx of cash for public radio across the board. That would be great. Mackenzie Scott, if you're out there, we could use some cash.
Well, listeners, we have the power to help make Mookie's wish come true. Please keep that in mind for 2026. And, you know, there's this karma thing. Let me explain some California concepts to all the non-Californian listeners of the station. If you want good karma, good vibes, good energy for 2026, maybe make a little charitable contribution and do something kind here at the very end of 2025 and help support your favorite listener-supported radio station. In the meantime, Dave, give us the lowdown.
The lowdown. Okay, let's talk about the lowdown, Liv, which is a show on FX created by Sterling Harjo, who created the fantastic Reservation Dogs. If you haven't seen it, run, don't walk to your platform of choice and watch Reservation Dogs right now. I will wait. I'll sit here and wait while you watch it.
Okay.
So, in the lowdown, Ethan Hawke plays a bookstore owner and journalist. He calls himself a truthstorian who lives in North Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this is a noir with great performances from Hawke and Gene Triplehorn and Keith David and Kyle MacLachlan, to name just a few. And like most noirs, the plot is convoluted, but it involves land, murder, and a lot.